Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Sophie with my weekly podcast from the studios of Westwood One. Talking today about domestic violence and some of the difficulties with that, both from an emotional and a physical perspective. Last week, we talked about school and getting back to school and transitioning back and homework and packing lunches and schedules. We had some really great calls. We had a lot of great questions. And I think we kind of answered people's concerns. We gave them some great tools and good ways to be able to move forward during this transition because actually it's a good thing. So today we're going to do domestic violence. Not the easiest thing to talk about, but definitely a very important thing to talk about. And again, I'm Dr. Sophie, board-certified child adolescent psychiatrist, also family practitioner, also the medical director of Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services, the largest child welfare and foster care system in this country, where we tend to oversee anywhere from 35,000 to 40,000 children's lives, and it's my role to navigate the health and the mental health of those children. So as they enter that system, really making sure they get good exams and good mental health screenings, and then connected to the appropriate treatment. It's a big job, but it's a lot of fun, and it's really great to be able to change systems. So one day we're going to talk about that. But today, again, we're doing domestic violence. Some of the things I think are pretty interesting in my own life that may be interesting to you are my upcoming episodes and treatment on The Housewives of Beverly Hills. You'll be able to see actual treatment happening where we talk about many different issues and bringing a couple to be able to own what's going on in their own lives and to be able to make the necessary changes and decisions, though they may be uncomfortable, for the safety and better outcome of their children and themselves. And also, I just did a episode yesterday of taping with Dr. Drew on his new show, Life Changers, on the CW network. And it was a very interesting episode we did between a mother and a daughter who have been having a long-term conflict after a divorce. So I'll let you know when that's going to air, and you can check that out as well. And again, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is why we're talking about domestic violence today. And we're going to be taking callers, and we're going to be talking to many people who have some questions, issues, they need some clarity. What is domestic violence? Giving me some of the situations they find themselves in, trying to understand, is that domestic violence that they are in? And just in general, understanding what it is, how to get some help, and where to often get that help. All right. And I also want to tell you about a new phone number we're going to start next week, which is 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. It's a new 800 number for you to call in, even when we're not on the air, to be able to give me your thoughts, your questions, things that you'd like to hear more about or things that you would like not to hear about, so that I can then plan my shows better for you. But again, that's 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Leave me your questions, leave me your messages, leave me your issues, and I'll happily deal with them as best as I can. All right, let's go to the phones now. I think we have a question. Connie?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Sophie.
Hi.
I was wondering about if violence in the home with children from ages, you know, 2 to, let's say, 10, if they are aware of what's going on at that early age, does it stay with them? And should they be taken out of the home when such things are happening?
First of all, thank you for calling in. And that's a really great question, because I don't think many people think that young children are affected by those kinds of things. And they definitely are, because whether it's a physical violent household or it's a emotionally violent or it's just loud or whatever it is, your children not only feel that energy, but they hear and they see, believe it or not. And so, yes, they are affected. And it's really similar to whether you're in a battle or you're just on the battlefield. And so you are affected just by being on the battlefield. You may not be fighting the fight, but you're hearing the fight and you're seeing the fight, and it will translate over to you. So, yes, they are affected. And it is better for them to not be seen or hearing any of that stuff. So however you can remove them is great, because your primary focus when you have children in the house should be the physical and the emotional safety of that child. So, yes, they get affected, and yes, it can be long term, and especially it's directly related to how many times they hear it, how often they hear it, how intense it is. So over time, it does get cumulative, and it will really affect them.
Okay, so, thank you so much.
You're
I
welcome.
Really appreciate that.
Thanks for calling in. So we just had a call, very interesting call. Many people think that children who are small maybe don't pick up on things, or they don't realize the subtleties that are going on between a husband and a wife or some violent episode going on in a home. But at the end of the day, please give your children much more credit than that. They do hear, they do see, they do feel. And though they may not be able to translate it or communicate it back to you, they are affected. So buyer beware. All right. I want to give you a couple hotline numbers and places to really leave some questions or go look for some answers. For domestic violence, the domestic violence hotline, very important place to call with any question you have or any need you may have or any resource that you may have. And that is 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. That, again, is the domestic violence hotline. Please call if you have any questions regarding anything with your own life, questioning whether you're in a situation that's safe or not, or even if you want to volunteer or you want to find a place to find a resource. It's 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. And for me, I have a new 800 number coming up. It'll be up and running next week, 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Please feel free, call me, give me your questions. Give me the things you'd like to talk about, things you don't want to talk about, things you want to know more about. I'm here. I want to talk about this stuff because we need to get it out in the open, make it safe, and make it a place where we can then work with each other and build the community to get help for people who need help. These days, it's getting tougher to get help. These days, people are losing their insurance. They don't have resources. We need to be able to help people feel safe and find a connection to a resource so that they can get the help, keep themselves safe, and their family and their children. And that's all we're about here. All right, let's go to the phones now. I think we have Sarah.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for calling in today. We're talking about domestic violence. Have you experienced domestic violence? Do you know what it is? I assume you're a younger one. How old are you?
I'm 18.
18. So, I mean, you know, I think it's very important for you to understand what domestic violence is and to be able to recognize it if it was happening to you. And
right.
Do you know what it is? Let me give you a different question. Do you think women your age really are aware of what it is, see the red flags of it, whether they're on a date with a guy who starts to bully them or they see early signs? Do you think young women are educated enough to this stuff and know what to do about it?
No, in my opinion, I don't think women my age are really educated about it at all, and not even my age, even older ages. I think that a lot of people are blindsided by love or what they feel is love.
Right.
And, you know, when you're blindsided by something, you don't want to see it and you don't want to recognize what's happening, so you just block it out.
Why do you think they're blocking it out? Just because love is blind or because they're in a place where they're so hungry for attention or love that they will ignore red flags?
I think they'll block it out for both of those reasons. I think one is that they want the attention and they are so, like, hungry to be loved and want to be loved so much. But I also think it's because they don't want to recognize that they're in this place. Like, I think they don't want to think they need help or anything else, but in reality they do.
And how do you think going forward we can help young women feel more comfortable to and get educated to this? Like, where is the place that they would hear and see the education if we put it out there? Is it on the websites? Is it in building it into curriculums in school? Like, where do you see us educating on a national level young women to this kind of stuff?
I think a lot of places that it usually happens is in schools. So I think maybe in high schools and colleges it would be the most important to teach it at, because in high school, girls at such a vulnerable age, they'll let anybody do anything because they are in so much love. And college is kind of the same thing. Like, you're in so many places at one time. If you get the love of somebody, that's all you want.
Right. So you think high school is a place to start to bring these topics up and in those forums be able to teach and talk and open up dialogues with women?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a place that it should be taught. I think that's one of the most important places to teach it, is when they're about this age.
And what do you think about bringing those men on board? Do you think they need to be spoken to or talked about or brought into this fold?
I think they should be spoken to. I think they should be talked to. I think they should see what they're doing. But a lot of the times they don't want to recognize what they're doing themselves and already know what they're doing. So a lot of them don't even want the help.
Okay. And do you see that this domestic violent issue only a woman victimized role, or do you see some men, so oftentimes do you, in your mind, do you think men are victimized as well through domestic violence?
Honestly, I think both people can be victimized. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. If someone's treating you the wrong way or putting their hands on you or not treating you in a way that you feel comfortable, then you're being victimized. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman.
Okay. So you think early on we should educate young people about what violence is, what it looks like when it's within a relationship, what it looks like when it has sexuality and sex connected to it and love. So that people can then understand it and see it. Do you think that will lower people's fear of it and then they'll see it, recognize it, and reach for help more often? Is that the goal?
I think if people see more, places for them to get help, more people to talk to, I think if it's more in the open, it'll be easier for them to come, because right now it's so hush-hush and they're ashamed and they want to hide it from everybody. But if they know there's help and somebody they can go to, I think they'll be more open to come and tell somebody.
Okay. I think that's really good for us to be able to have our listeners hear that you as a young woman feel that opening up this dialogue, making it safer early on in high school, even to both men and women, will really get us to a place where people are reaching for help, recognizing things a lot sooner.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Interesting phone call and dialogue with Sarah, who knew she wanted to say something but wasn't sure. And I think what we ended up saying was that as a young woman, she feels it's very important starting around a high school age to build into curriculums through the schools or through community forums to be able to educate all young people, male and female, about violence, love, domestic violence, violence within relationships, and the utilizing of sex as power, all those kinds of things that really end up with a violent outcome, especially if you marry that person. So teaching people, giving them red flags and ways to recognize so they can avoid problems, reach for resources, get some help, it's a win-win. Prevention is the key. So again, it's Dr. Sophie, and we are here taking your calls. We're looking for you to call in with any of your questions, any of your issues, any misunderstandings, anything you want to know. Today's our topic is domestic violence and its ramifications, how it rears its ugly head, any red flags that we see, and ways to get some help and resources. Many very interesting statistics about domestic violence. One that really struck me, and I see all the time in my practice, is anybody that I'm treating, male or female, but particularly female, that are victims of domestic violence or in situations that are not necessarily comfortable for them from a relationship standpoint, 57% of those women with some kind of history of domestic violence currently happening have had a history of abuse in their past. And they also have a comorbid, which means along the side of, a diagnosis of some kind of mental health problem. So what that really means is 50% of women that are suffering from domestic violence situations also have a mental health disorder and a history of some kind of traumatic abuse in their past, whether it was physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, whatever it is. But those things seem to go hand in hand: mental health disorders, past histories of abuse, and a current situation that's abusive. So I urge people, men, women, anybody who's had a past of trauma or a past of some kind of abusive situation, please get it dealt with. Go to therapy. Work it out. Talk and understand so that you understand how that has formulated who you are, and you're able to then go out and get the help that you need so you don't make bad choices and find yourself in the same situation as you came from. All right, let's go to the phones. I think we have Jen on the phone. Jen?
Yes, I'm concerned that a girlfriend of mine might be in an abusive relationship, and I wonder how I should handle that.
Very good question. What makes you think she's in an abusive relationship?
She isn't as available to me as she used to be, and I've noticed that she has some rather suspicious injuries, and when I ask her about them, she's very evasive. She gives me inconsistent stories, and I'm concerned that her boyfriend might be hurting her, but she seems to be protecting him. What can I do to help her? Should I call the police?
Well, I mean, I think it's really great that you want to help her and that you're smart enough and intuitive enough to feel that she needs help. The issue is that she needs to feel safe with you in order to relinquish any of that stuff to you. And you also have to understand that even though she relinquishes it and she tells you maybe something's happening and confirms it, that doesn't mean she's going to want your help, take your help, or hear it. So you're going to have to prepare yourself for the frustration of that. And I think some of that you can see as we go through this season of Housewives of Beverly Hills. And you'll see that there's a lot of issues on there that women, the supportive people and the other housewives of Taylor are very upset and very frustrated because they're trying to help somebody who they think and know needs help but isn't hearing it. So you got to be able to handle that and know that domestic violence is not something necessarily you can get out of easily. It's a trap. It's a love-hate thing. It's a fear-based thing. So I think just being there, being quiet but supportive, letting her know that you know what's going on, or you at least think you know what's going on, and you're not judging, you're there for her.
Should I confront the boyfriend?
Well, I think what you'll end up doing if you did that is she's going to run to protect him, and then you'll have lost her altogether. And that's typically what happens. And they will, until the very bitter end, protect the perpetrator.
Is there something in her past that makes her want to stay with him, perhaps? Should I talk to her family?
Well, I think absolutely. As I was saying earlier before you got on, 57% of women in domestic violence situations have had a past history of trauma. That's a lot. That's more than half. And so, yes, I'm sure there's been something. I don't know if talking to her family is going to do anything. I mean, you can maybe bring it up, but you also have to keep an alliance with her, because if she feels you're doing stuff on the side, then she loses trust with you and she will be frightened and shut down. So I think the bottom line is you let her know that you're kind of on the same page and that you're there, but that you will not just sit around. And if you find that it's becoming to a point where she's out of control with it, that you're going to have to jump in.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. Very, very good question. Very important question. Many people find themselves in situations with women or friends, girlfriends, guy friends, who they feel are being taken advantage of in a domestic violence situation, and they don't know how to bring it up. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And oftentimes, really saying nothing but just putting your arm around that person physically and emotionally, euphemistically, making them feel safe is really the key, because they need to be able to know that they can come to you when they have to. And they'll come quicker when they don't feel that they're being pulled from the perpetrator, when they feel that you understand and you're giving them their time. You got to balance that, though, with the ability to make sure that they're safe, because sometimes they can't really modify their own safety, and you have to. So being there, letting them know you're there, but also jumping in when you have to, that's the key. All right, let's go to the phones. I think we have Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. I did have a question. What is to be done when you remove yourself from a situation where there's domestic violence? You know you shouldn't be there, but at times you can be swayed to think that there's a way to change that person and you should go back.
Very good question. That is the trap, the actual trap of domestic violence, what you just described. The victim who knows in their head it's the right thing to do, but in their heart they're pulled back, correct?
Exactly.
And you got to understand, it's the most difficult thing about all this is trying to understand and accept that you cannot fix or change someone else. And you can only fix or change yourself. And so that pull is what you have to be aware of, knowing that you have your head and your heart in check and that you're not going to let either one overrule the other and overtake you and you go back. That's the key. It's really trying to be able to navigate that and know that what the problem really is in that other person who's the perpetrator, you can't fix. And though you love them, loving them sometimes is walking away so they feel whatever it is that they need to feel to at least hit a wall, maybe, hopefully not to that extent, and get some help themselves. But that's the key, and that's the trap. I keep going back because I can fix. You can't fix. You're not a doctor. You're not trained. And even if you were, you're in it. You can't do it. So the issue is the perpetrator has to get themselves fixed. The victim has to get themselves safe. And that's all there is to it, because otherwise it becomes violent and scary and somebody ends up getting hurt.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, we have another call on the line. Michelle?
Hi, Dr. Sophie.
Hey, Michelle.
I'm actually calling today not because I have any domestic abuse issues myself or do I know of anyone actually going through that, but, you know, I would like to know what's out there and where would one go to be able to help or to volunteer to help some people that, you know, are in this situation.
I think that's very, very admirable of you and very kind of you, because there are many people who need a lot of help in these situations. As you can imagine, it's scary to leave. It's scary to find a place for you or your child or your children that's going to continue everyone growing in their life while you're in this transition. So I would urge you to, you know, look at the domestic violence shelters within your area and you can find them online, or you can call the domestic violence hotline. And I've given that number out. I'll give it to you now. It's 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. You can call there, tell them what you're interested in doing, where you live, and geographically they'll find you a couple of resources there that you can call and say, hey, I'd like to volunteer.
Oh, perfect.
You can also get on the website of a shelter here in Los Angeles at 1736fcc.org. It's a great shelter downtown for women who take women in and their children and start to transition them back into a career, giving them mental health services, giving them health services, and getting their children on with school so that that family continues to build and be strong so as they transition out of that shelter. So it's another really great place to go if you're within the Los Angeles area. It's 1736fcc.org.
Oh, that is so perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for helping.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. So we're getting all kind of calls today, people who want to help, people who need help, people who really just want to understand better how to help their friends or how to reach out within resources within their community to help the community at large because they may not know anybody. And that's really a great thing to do, to be able to break down barriers and understandings. There's nothing wrong with you, your children, your family going out and one day during the weekend being able to volunteer at a shelter, volunteer at a community center, whatever you can do to show that giving back is really the key. And it really does take a community to make everyone strong. And at the end of the day, in the place that we're at from an economic standpoint and where kind of the view of the world is and everyone's a little upside down, it really does build a lot of good faith and a lot of good stability within characters of people and communities to reach and help each other because it's really the only way we're ever going to survive. So reaching out is the key. Again, we're here. We're taking your calls. The new hotline number for next week is going to be 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW. That's 1-855-767-4966. Leave it on the message if we're not around during the week. We're happy to hear your messages, your requests, your needs, your resources, any of the stuff that you want, we're happy to do. And again, domestic violence is our topic today. It's a really tough issue at times. However, it's not something we're going to run away from. It's something we're going to talk about. It's something we're going to face head on and be able to help people understand that it is scary, but it has to be dealt with. And the sooner we do it, the better. A couple calls earlier today we had where a caller came in and really educated us to where she, as a young woman at 18, feels that we could really impact the world by having a good educational component built into a curriculum in high school for both men and women, to be able to educate everyone on it, because domestic violence is not a woman issue or a male issue. It's a us issue. And men bully, women bully. Men have problems in domestic violence. They're the victims. They're the perpetrators, as are women victims and perpetrators. So in general, it's a community issue. We need to educate. Very interesting thing. Very, very scary thing. But please, the fear is what immobilizes us and oftentimes will prevent us from getting help. So we got to move on. Couple good facts that I think are really interesting that I ran across. Intimate partner violence made up 20% of all non-fatal violent crimes experienced by women in early 2000. That's a really, really impactful, interesting concept, which really translates to partner relationships. That means boyfriend-girlfriend violence. 20% of non-fatal violent crimes experienced by women. So that means relationships are really tough. And they get violent often, and that's a lot. We have the Nicole Brown Simpson issue. We see it constantly throughout our culture where women are brutalized on some level, whether it's physical, it's emotional, or it's both. And I think we really need to take a look at that, and that's what we're talking about today, domestic violence. Another very, very interesting topic and tidbit I found. In 2000, there were over 1,200 women and over 400 men killed by an intimate partner. I mean, that is really, really significant. And yes, these are very violent crimes, and they're all done within the confines of a loving relationship, which is really the trap of domestic violence. You think you love that person, you think they love you, therefore you think that you should either tolerate this behavior or you can fix this behavior, and neither one of them are true. You should not tolerate it. You cannot fix it. You need to be able to have the clarity and the arm's length ability to pull back and be able to take a look at this stuff and say, you know what, this isn't working. It's not healthy. It's not safe for you, for me, for our children, whatever, and be able to step back. And where we're at today, it's very difficult to see that. And that's why we need to do as much prevention for our young people as we can, because the more tools and the more understandings we give them early on, the better they'll be able to identify these things and get out of them, get them fixed or address them or get them some help so that they don't end up in these bad situations and have these statistics that I'm talking about. So very, very difficult situation. Doesn't mean it can't be fixed. Doesn't mean it can't be helped. I think we should go back to the phones at some point. But right now I want to talk about some of the questions that I get frequently asked about domestic violence that I think are pretty interesting. And write into me and tell me what you think about some of these questions. But a couple of them that I found very interesting I want to bring up to you is, I'm often asked, is there very much family violence in the United States? And though this is a very difficult time and very difficult question to answer based on this time that we are in history, typically it shows that only about 4% of American families have experienced severe physical violence of a degree that has a predictability leading to an injury or a death. So that means that only about 4% of American families have the violence to the intensity that leads to a significant injury or a death. But that doesn't mean that there are not other lesser forms of violence that happen in more often in homes. So, for instance, slapping, kicking, scratching, shoving, those kinds of things that don't necessarily end in a death or a significantly bad injury. When you look at those kinds of homes, that population, the percentage from 4% of homes with violent outbursts goes to now 26%. So it's interesting when you look at intensity and types of violence, really significant violence, 4% of American families, but violence that kind of is a pushing or a shoving or a pinching or a poking or a whatever, you're up to now 26%. And that's oftentimes a really big and significant percentage. So it's tough. It's out there. People are violent. People are explosive. People are using more drugs oftentimes because they're trying to escape the hard times that we're having. And so when we're doing those kinds of things and we're trying to mask symptoms or we're trying to self-medicate because life is tough, please be aware that the tendency for violence is higher and people can act out because they're really stressed out. Another question that I find really interesting, I get again asked oftentimes, is this violence really serious in the kind of violent situations and domestic violence? And absolutely, it is very significant. The violence inflicted by a family member oftentimes is some of the most intense and violent injury you're ever going to get. 23% of stranger assaults involved injury to victims, 57% were spousal. So what that's telling us there is that violence is significant, and in families it's even more significant because there's not only the physical impact of it, it's the emotional impact as well. I think it's very important, and I think it's very telling to be able to look at this and really understand that there's levels of violence, intensities of violence, and then there's the family piece that adds on to it even more. And I think the more it gets ramped up in intensity and the closer it is to a family member, the higher the prevalence of getting hurt, both physically and emotionally. All right, let's go back to the phones. I think we have a call now coming in from Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Dr. Sophie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I'm good. Thank you. I have an awkward situation that's come to my attention. My son has a best friend, and he's been playing with this friend at both our house and the friend's house for years. In the last couple months, all the play dates have been at my house. And I asked my son, I said, why are we only playing at our house and not over there anymore? And he said, it's very uncomfortable at his friend's house because when his friend's father comes home, he screams and yells at the mother to the point that she has to physically run away from him and try to hide in a bedroom or another room to get away from it. And my son said, I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to play over there anymore, which puts both my son in an awkward spot as well as me because we're friends with the parents.
How old is your son?
He's 9.
Wow. So it's scary for him as well.
It's scary, and he knows that something's wrong. He doesn't quite know what's wrong. And then I also feel, do I need to do something with the adults involved as well as with the kids involved?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, with your son telling you this, it levels it out there for you that there's a unsafe situation both for your child and for their own child in that house. And have you, do you know these parents enough to talk with them?
We're social. I wouldn't say we're good friends, but I know them kind of casually.
Well, I would definitely urge you to kind of find a place where you can sit down with both of them at the same time, not just the husband taking them out for coffee or the wife, because they're going to split it off and you're never going to get the same story, or they're not going to hear the same thing. It's better for you to sit with them at the same place. Everybody look at each other in the eye and let them know confidentially what you're made aware of. Don't assume it's true. Listen to what they have to say, but allow them to know that you're really not comfortable with it in general, much less having your son exposed to it and then their son being exposed to it. And so I would go from there and see if they're open and they're communicative with you and they're collaborative and they want to see and they're going to go get some help. And if not, then definitely you've got to probably talk to the teachers or someone else who is a mandated reporter and that child is in their presence so that they can keep an eye on that child and then report as needed. If you really feel that it's out of control and they're not hearing you at all, you can always call your local child abuse hotline and you can email me and I'll give you the number for the hotline in your area and report that as a potential issue of abuse or neglect of a child and they'll investigate it as needed.
Well, I think you're right. I don't know what the truth is. I'm sure there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, so there's something going on. I'm not entirely comfortable getting in the middle of this and bringing the other two adults together. It's, you know, really not my role, but I guess I could do it under the guise of, you know, my son doesn't want to come to your house, and here's what I'm hearing.
Right.
You know,
right.
That might be a way to open the door.
Right. And if you really are not comfortable, then calling the child abuse hotline is the bottom line, best way to do it. You eliminate yourself out of it. You've given it to the officials, and they will take it from there.
And I can call, even though I don't know specifically that there's a problem. This is kind of second and third hand. That's enough to go on.
Absolutely. They'll either treat that as a consultation with you and tell you that there's nothing they can do, or they'll tell you, you know, give us the information of the people, we'll check it out and take it from there.
And can I be anonymous in that? I don't need my name floating around.
Absolutely. You have to tell them that you want to be anonymous, and then they don't have the reporting party's name on anything.
Okay.
But
that's probably the most comfortable way for me. I have no reason to believe that their son is in any harm's way, but clearly something's going on.
Right. But, you know, he may be in harm's way because he's hearing it and he's experiencing a battle even though he's not fighting it.
Well, that's true. Just being subjected to this is bad enough. Okay, I think that's good advice. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye. So, yes, today we've been really focused on domestic violence as October is Domestic Violence Month. But you know what? We're open to any call that you have. We're here to help with any resource, any question you have. So please call in. All right, let's go to the phones. I think we have Jen calling in.
Hi.
How are you? Thank you for calling.
Oh, sure, no problem. Sorry, I don't believe you could hear me there for a moment.
But I can hear you.
But I'm calling because I'm worried about my mother.
Why?
And she has a very stressful job. You know, she comes home after work and finds herself quite angry, and, you know, so oftentimes, you know, we find her crying, and then, you know, you try to console her, and she turns her anger on you or my sister and, you know, my father.
So
you know, we all, for a very long time, have tried to just, you know, be there for her, but it's just too affecting. Like, it just spins me into, like, the worst mood, and I love her and want to help her, but I just don't know how to. I mean, she, like, throws tantrums to the point where they're just unnecessarily, like, verbally abusive sometimes.
And is this new behavior?
Well, it's the severe, absolutely, but, you know, these mood swings or tantrums, they've been going on forever, so.
Okay. And so does she do it at work, or is she just coming home and letting loose?
Not to my knowledge has she done it at work. She definitely lets loose at home, so, you know, I'm assuming that she holds it in all day.
And how does your dad deal with it?
He truthfully just tries to encourage her with, like, positive words and just tells her to keep going, that he's proud of her, and, you know, that just he tries to help her, console her, you know, tries to be there for her. But sometimes it gets to be too much, and, you know, he has to ask her just to please stop, and, you know, it's just enough is enough. Like,
but it's not working.
No.
All right. Well, I think the bottom line is she needs some help, and she needs professional help to be able to get the tools to be able to navigate herself and de-escalate herself when she gets home. So whatever it is that's triggering her is dealt in a better way. But if she won't, do you think she'd go alone to treatment to talk to somebody?
Well, you know, she's gone to treatment before in the past, and I mean, you know, it's cyclical, it seems to be. Like, you know, she'll come to a realization where it's like, you know, she's just so emotionally exhausted and everyone around her won't even speak to her any longer that, you know, she'll finally, you know, do something about it in regards to therapy. But, I mean, I would love for all of us to go together in that respect, but how do you... I don't want to force her. I mean, how do I go
I think it's great. That's the best approach, to go together, whether it's you and her and your dad or all of you together,
right?
Would be the best thing to do. And go under the guise of, you know, let's go as a family to try to figure out how we all better communicate with each other. And trust me, when that's happening, whoever the identified real patient is and all of that will be singled out in a respectful way and get the treatment that they need. So go under the guise of let's go as a group. Let's learn how to function better. And strengthen ourselves, build on what's great about us instead of keep ripping ourselves apart and not focus on somebody, and then be able to have that one person get the treatment that they need.
Because practically everyone in my family is a recovering alcoholic, except for my mother. She's never gone to rehab specifically for that. So I'm just also worried about my, you know, father and sister who still live with her. I just don't want that to be a trigger.
Is everybody sober?
My father is, yes, and I believe my sister still is, yes.
That's good. And is your mom, does she drink or anything?
She does.
Yeah, and see, and that's probably what's going on here. And the only way you're going to get her safe, and she also, I'm sure, feels embarrassed and left out that she hasn't been able to attain that goal of sobriety.
Oh, my God, you know what? That would be so smart, to have that thought. That's so smart to think that way. Yeah.
And so helping her get to the point where she can get the help, get sober, and feel empowered just like everybody else, the best way to do it is really go as a team so she's not singled out.
That's excellent. Yeah. Because all these other approaches, I mean, just nothing has worked, you know, and she always just kind of cries about being the victim. You know, I mean, I'm summing it up, but, you know, ultimately that's kind of what her cries.
I mean, she's embarrassed because everyone else has had the strength to get sober, and she feels foolish as the mother of this group. So empower her, let her know you're proud of her, and that you're all going to go together as a team. Nobody's singled out, and then she'll obviously go in that direction.
Well, I can't thank you enough.
You're welcome.
For
call me.
Talk. Thank you.
And if you need anything, you know, email me, drsophie.com. Click on the Ask Me a Question link, and I'm happy to help you. And then we got an 800 number to call if you need me. It's 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW.
SOPHIE-NOW. Wonderful. Thank you again, Dr. Sophie.
You're welcome. Take care. Good luck.
You too.
Really great questions and really good issues that are every day for everybody. And people are really, I'm glad, calling in and being honest with the things that they need and helping them think about solutions in ways that maybe they didn't think before because they're in it and it's hard to see. They're also not as trained in it. But the bottom line is we gotta reach and work together. All right, so... another situation I want to talk about, another email I got, very interesting, is from a woman named Mary Beth. She tells me that she's 19, her parents are recently divorced, and she lives with her dad now out of, I guess, a custody kind of situation. However, dad has a girlfriend, and she's not happy with the girlfriend, and nor is the girlfriend happy with her. And so what she's writing me about is this feeling and situation she's living in where she doesn't feel nearly as connected with her dad. She doesn't feel nearly as loved or protected by her dad, which is the reason she went with him in the divorce and to live with him, because she didn't feel that connected to her mom. So now she's at a place where she's 19 physically, but probably emotionally. Her EQ is probably more like 16, and she feels unparented, out there on her own, living with her father and his girlfriend, basically in a dorm-like situation. So she's like, what do I do? How do I feel connected to them more or to my dad, or do I move out, or what should I do? And many women, many young girls, many kids in a divorce feel this because parents tend to oftentimes think they did a great job and with all the best intentions try to do a really good job to be able to transition from a solid family that now is divorced to a divorced family that functions. And that's a really tough transition to do, and That's going to be one of our bigger topics that we do coming on down the line. But oftentimes kids get caught in their divorces at the end of the day, and that's where this email is leading me to. And I think the best advice I would give her is to really be able to sit down and really clear up a few things, talk with her dad and let him know exactly how she feels. But on the other hand, really reframe her understanding and her expectations from her relationship with her father. Because many times, and since she is, by the way, the oldest child of like four, I think, it's important to realize that oftentimes the older child in a divorce tends to feel that the parent they go with is now the role they have to transition to as being the spouse of that person. They have to protect that parent now. They have to love that parent in a different way. For all intents and purposes, they become the husband or the wife of that new person, and that's really not the case. So that's why I urge her to sit down with her dad, get her feelings out, but also straighten up her boundaries with her relationship and understand that she doesn't need to protect him. He is allowed to go on and love other people, and the love between a father and a daughter is very different than the love between a husband and a wife or a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And the boundaries need to really be cleaned up a little bit. Sounds like they're blurred a little bit. And I think once that's done, the expectations are in better place and then we can move on. So I think that that's what I would tell her to do. And I think that's what she should do. So let's go to the phones. I think we have Amanda on the phone. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm good. So my family's starting to talk about the holidays. And it's a difficult time for me because I don't really get along with my dad's wife. And when I'm with my mom, I get really stressed out and I tend not to enjoy myself. But my siblings kind of are the ones that pull me in one direction or the other. And I don't really know how to make myself happy and feel good about the holiday and also not let my siblings down.
That's a very good question. And many people find themselves in that situation. I assume that your dad's wife is not your biological mother.
No, she is not.
Okay. And so you're saying when you are with your mom, it's not a fit either.
No.
So you
and
don't...
I've read your book and I've, you know, kind of learned from there how to handle certain situations, but it's difficult because I care about my siblings and I want to be with them, but then I also compromise myself.
Right. I get it. And I think the most important thing I would tell you is don't isolate yourself. So don't get overwhelmed where there's not a perfect answer for any of it, whether it's at your dad's or your mother's or your siblings or whatever, and pull yourself back and go sit alone, because that's not going to help, because it's only going to make you feel lonely, angry, and then even more upset. So What you have to do is find a balance of where you can spend some time here and some time there and be able to spread yourself a little bit all over the place, make your connection and your appropriate hellos and visits, and then pull yourself out so that you don't get to that toxic level where then you feel you've compromised yourself and then you're angry again.
Right.
It's tough, but it is your family. Holidays are tough. They're very stressful on their own, much less with all these other levels.
Right. And then sometimes, you know, I get the guilt trip from one parent, and then I get, you know, the angry side from another parent for not participating.
Right, but why don't you participate?
I guess, you know, I guess I choose to do something else. My own plans are something that I want to do with other friends, not my family.
Why?
I don't know. Probably because I end up happier, or it's more fulfilling for me at the end of the day than to put myself in a situation that gives me anxiety or, you know, kind of adds fuel to my fire.
And I get that, but that's that original thing I just said, that isolating yourself isn't the key. And that's what you tend to do by doing those kinds of activities. You isolate yourself from meaningful activity that could possibly build your relationship with your family. Because
so
you don't.
Even though I get a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Still try to make that effort for a limited amount of time.
Exactly. And then you build tolerance over time and you leave each one of those with a good ending. So you know before you get toxic from it that you disengage, but you've been there and you build and build and build before you know it. It doesn't bother you to do most of the activity and then you get out and get on with your friends. That's
okay.
The way you build your life first with them, then build your friends, because you don't want to use your friend relationships as the way to escape.
Right.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Dr.
you.
Sophie.
Have a nice day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We had a really good day today. Dr. Sophie here again. We did a lot of great questions, a lot of good education on domestic violence. We had a lot of resources brought out. We had a couple different non-domestic violence issues brought up. Divorce, being caught in it, how to get out of it. So I think it's been a really great day. I think it's been a really good topic for us to look at. I think that it's important for us to be able to figure out how to be a community, how to work together, how to not be afraid of mental health, and what we need to do. Again, before we sign off, I want to give you some good hotline numbers. The domestic violence hotline number, once again, 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. My new number starting next week, 1-855-SOPHY-NOW, S-O-P-H-Y-NOW, or 1-855-767-4966. The other key number from last week's podcast was the suicide prevention hotline number. Please call it if you think you need it, 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-273-8255. Check me out on my website, drsophy.com. I have a bunch of good links there. One, ask me a question. Please ask me some questions. Tell me what you want to hear about. Call my 855 number. Let me know the things that you want to hear about, things you don't want to hear about, more resources, whatever it is. I'm happy to get it in there and build my show around it. I also want you to follow me on Twitter at Dr. Sophy and add me on Facebook for any updates, TV appearances, podcasts, and remember, please make sure you sweep, S-W-E-E-P.
Fine, oh, you turn out fine, but you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, you gotta keep your head up, your head down, hey, I know it's hard, no, it's hard to remember sometimes, but you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down.